Hi, this is Matt
and Sean
from Two Black Guys
with Good Credit. If you own or operate a business, whether it's a local operation or a global corporation, partnering with Bank of America could be your smartest move.
By teaming with Bank of America, you'll enjoy exclusive digital tools, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter.
Position your business to capitalize on opportunity in a moment's notice.
Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Bank of America, N.A., copyright 2024.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Daily Tech News Show is powered by you. To find out more, head to dailytechnewsshow.com/support. This is the Daily Tech News for Wednesday, May 30th, 2018 in Los Angeles. I'm Tom Merritt.
And from Studio Feline, where I just stifled a sneeze, I'm Sarah Lane.
And the beautiful Hack 5 offices in downtown Oakland, California, I am here with the Pig Report, Patrick Norton. Sorry.
Patrick's wearing a gimme cap, so he has to pretend he works for the Illinois Farm Bureau for the remainder of the show.
No, this is a Powell's Book cap. There was no gimmeing about this.
You had to buy that. You're like,
I was hoping you were going to say that you adopted a little pig.
To go with our, we have chickens and a husky and children, and I think if we had a pig, it would not be a leashable pig, but a gonna be bacon pig, which would be hard to explain to the children. Where did the pig go? To the farm. Upstate.
Yeah. Look at your plate, kids. Hey, our producer Roger Chang is here. He has produced the show in large part, but his internet went out, so you can't see or hear him. But hopefully, I don't know, maybe his internet will come back while we're doing the show and he'll pop back in. But let's start with a few tech things you should know.
Panasonic said Wednesday it plans to develop automotive batteries that don't use cobalt, which is a mineral and very expensive because of its scarcity, mostly found in the Democratic Republic of Congo. In a meeting with analysts, Panasonic's Kanji Tamura said that the company has cut down on cobalt usage substantially and that zero usage is in the near future. Panasonic supplies batteries to Tesla.
Mary Meeker released her 294-slide-long Internet Trends of 2018. It's always a good read. Among the highlights are smartphones and internet adoption are slowing, time spent on the internet is still growing, mobile payments, e-commerce, and voice-controlled things like the Echo all on the rise. Tech companies are dominating, tech disruption is accelerating, and China is catching up to the U.S. as an internet hub. We'll take some time to read through those slides and talk about Meeker's report in a little more detail on tomorrow's show.
Qualcomm announced a dedicated chipset for standalone VR and AR headsets. The Snapdragon XR1 can stream 4K, 30 frames per second content, though it won't support free-moving 6 degrees of freedom. HTC Vive, Vuzix, which I've never heard of before, Meta, and Pico all appeared on stage at the announcement. The XR1 is meant for low-cost, low-power headsets.
And HP announced an update to the HP Omen 15 laptop with reduced bezels, 8th-gen Intel quad and hex-core processors, up to 32 gigabytes of RAM, support for NVIDIA's GTX 1070 with Max-Q, can also support 4K gaming at 60 hertz. And HP announced a bunch of accessories, a $179 optical mechanical sequencer keyboard, a $79 gaming reactor mouse, and something called the Mindframe headset. They didn't give a price for that. It's a gaming headset with internal cooling technology.
What?
The Omen 15 arrives July 29th, starting at $979. I don't know if it keeps the device
physical
or your head
cooling?
Cool. Yeah, that's a good question. All right, let's talk a little bit more about the darling of video streamers, Plex.
Plex is my media server of choice, so I was very excited about this. Plex released a redesign of its Android and iOS apps, adding beta support for podcasts and more options to personalize your experience. You can now remove default categories from the home screen. You know, if you don't want documentaries, you can get rid of that, and add new categories like On Deck or Continue Watching, which can pick up from where you left off on other devices. There are now tabs on the bottom for movies, shows, podcasts, and more. The podcast part of this, if you read Plex's announcement, that was sort of the big push. I haven't tried it yet, so I'm excited. I use Plex primarily on the Apple TV. I sometimes will pick up a show between that and iOS if I go to the gym and I want to finish a show or something like that. So that functionality, at least in part, was already available. But the iOS experience has always been more of like it's a companion app. It's not really its own. So having the personalization is great.
Yeah, the continue watching was a function, but now you can have the category on your home screen. So instead of having to find it, it'll say, oh, well, you were watching this. Here it is. Like, you don't have to dig around for it. It's mostly an interface change. And if you think there, I bet there's a few of you out there who still think Plex, that's for people who want to manage their copyright-free videos. And I don't legally have a lot of those, so I don't use Plex. You're missing the boat. Yes, it can be used to manage your video files, but it does way more than that. It's got DVR capability. It can integrate with things like Netflix and Hulu, etc. Now that they're adding a whole podcast directory right inside, you used to be able to manage podcasts through Plex, but now it's native to the app. So that's going to make it work
better.
Yeah, yeah. Music is in there.
It's just a really nice interface. It's, it's a media interface like lots of others, but it is the most fully functional, particularly because I'm so married to my Apple TV for a lot of my content, but it's the nicest one I've ever seen. And the interface is nice too.
Patrick, have you used Plex at all over the years?
I haven't been using it too much in the last couple of years because I'm in between, mostly because I've traditionally almost entirely used it to manage my legally obtained content.
Of course, we're all adults.
We're all adults here. We can talk about legally obtained content. But I'm actually in the process of building a new server in my house and playing around with Plex because it's doing a lot of integration that I actually like with apps, which is exciting because I've been playing around with the Cavo, which is a big sort of, you know, artificial intelligence and machine vision trying to unify your media experience at the content level. And it's early. And
well, and Plex
sounds
is
like
great.
A Patrick project.
Plex is great for server management, but a lot of people don't realize it. You don't have to use it for that. You
right.
can, and it's really good at that. But you can use it without running your own server now. They have a great cloud service as well. So,
you know, one of the things, I'm sorry, before we move on, just because I'm so excited about this, is in the announcement also, if you have multiple servers with content that you're, you know, you kind of have to switch back and forth, it can now merge those servers.
Oh,
now,
wow.
Previously, you could search for something specific via all servers, but you can actually see everything together. So also a good plus.
Yeah, Squished in the chat room says, how do we start getting into setting up Plex? Download it. Sign up for an account. That's pretty easy.
What's your top Plex tip, Sarah?
That was it.
Okay, got it. All right, we're going to break from our norm of telling you what the news of the day might mean to telling you a few facts that even physicists have a hard time explaining to each other. But trust me, this is going to be worth it. Scientists at Aalto University in Finland published research indicating time crystals, a real name for a real thing, may make it possible to build a quantum computer that doesn't require near-perfect zero temperatures. Crystal is a structure where the atoms prefer a point in space, salt, snowflakes, etc. A time crystal sees the atoms prefer not only a point in space, but a point in time as well. And here's where I go to just stating things that are true and not claiming to understand them. Daniel Oberhaus at Motherboard used an analogy where two people holding a jump rope rotate their arms, say, four times, but the rope only rotates once. So Susie only has to jump once, even though they rotated their arms four times. Or how about this one? A coin that has a 50-50 chance of being heads every so often in a predictable period has a 75-25 chance of being heads. Anyway, none of that's going to make sense to any of us, but how does this relate to quantum computing? Qubits are the basis of quantum computing. They can be one, zero, or both in superposition. One problem with qubits is the act of reading them changes them. So reading them becomes problematic if they vanish when you try to read them. The research here indicates that generating time crystals in qubits might solve this by making the qubits want to be coherent. In other words, become a predictable time crystal. None of us fully understand this. Not even the physicists can wrap their brains around it, but the math is right. And time crystals were proven to exist in January 2017 and confirmed in two independent studies the following May. This is one of those great science things where they're like, we can prove it exists and we have the math to show quote unquote why, but explaining it is almost impossible.
Well, okay, so right, I don't get it. So a jump rope,
not alone.
It only revolves once. Why are the hands revolving? Like,
because time crystal, Sarah.
Quantum physics.
Hey,
magnets.
If you, I know a lot of you want to try to take a crack at understanding this. Please only take me up on this if you really understand it. But if anybody really understands it, or at least is as closer than we are, please let us know. Feedback at dailytechnewsshow.com.
Time crystals. Love it. All right, back to VR. Oculus launched the Venues platform for Oculus Go and the Samsung Gear VR. Venues provides access to live streaming VR broadcasts of things like concerts and sports. The first event will be a live Vance Joy concert. They have a great song. Oh, what's the name of that song? I'll have to remember it later. Anyway, good band. At Colorado's Red Rocks Amphitheater, followed by a Gotham comedy live show streamed from New York City. A full slate of events was announced through August 27th.
I mean, I get on paper why this will be attractive, right? Like, ooh, it'll be like I'm there. I've got an Oculus Go. I will try one of these and tell you.
Well, as a person who doesn't really like going to music concerts because people... and also tall people and just kind of all that stuff.
Contact
I
high.
I like this idea. I would try it out. I like to feel like I'm part of something that's really cool. You know, Coachella, for example. I'm not going, but I would like to watch Beyonce's performance in VR.
Oh, totally. Sure. I love watching it on YouTube. It might be even better in VR. Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
Environmentalists fear Thailand is the new dumping ground for e-waste after China banned overseas trash last year, saying it would stop accepting 24 types of imported e-waste. Reuters has a special report on this. China State Media estimates in 2016 the country accepted 70% of the world's 500 metric tons of e-waste, and now they're not. The 1997 Basel Convention limits movement of hazardous waste, but it doesn't prohibit exports from developed to less developed countries entirely. Thai Prime Minister Prayuth Chan-o-cha vowed this week to step up nationwide inspections as part of a plan to combat illegal electronic waste dumping. The upshot here is electronic waste is piling up in ports because China won't take it anymore. People are trying to figure out a place to put it, and they're smuggling it in some cases into other countries. Thailand particularly is seeing a big uptick in this. And it's not – it's coming from the region. A lot of the stuff in Thailand, they say, comes from Japan, comes from Korea, comes from Taiwan, comes from China in some cases.
That's still a spectacular amount of e-waste. And Kyle Wien's over at iFixit. This is a huge passion of him, partially as part of, you know, okay, iFixit, we repair things, but also keeping things out of landfills. And he's actually chased down a lot of e-waste, like literally figuring out the containers and where the containers end up. And where this stuff, I mean, it's intense to see people on the streets basically melting motherboards to separate metal out of them and, you know, sucking in all of the toxic fumes that comes out there or the stuff being buried. It's
the danger of it is one of the reasons China banned it. But that causes another problem, which is, well, then what do we do with it? You know, well, you're just pushing the problem into a different port.
The Basel Convention needs a little... you know, update, right? I mean, if a developed country can be like, well, I'm just going to take it to that country because we don't want to deal with it because this is bad for you. I mean, that's not a solution at all. Thailand is also, I mean, if you're going to compare China and Thailand is super small compared to China. That is not great anywhere, but that's not the solution.
Yeah. I mean, I think the solution is people to stop trying to send it to China, which.
Well, that was the first part. China saying we're not going to take most of it anymore. But then where does it go? Like, you have to have a worldwide solution. You can't just have each country saying, well, I'm not going to do it. And other countries like, well, now it's coming to me. Well, I'm not going to do it either. Somebody's got to do it. And it has to be done safely and hopefully efficiently so that you can recycle as much as possible as you're doing it. So. It will be benefit for everyone if we figure this out instead of just trying to push it around the globe.
The tragedy of the common e-waste.
Yeah, it's like the poop train down in Alabama where they have a big train full of feces that nobody wants to claim, and it's just stinking up a town in Alabama.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes. And then it's I believe it's New York City poop.
What?
Get a rope.
Oh, my goodness. This fruit is full of surprises today. Here's another solution that might interest the people of California. The state is testing new digital license plates with customizable displays that could eliminate registration stickers. You could register electronically and also act as a theft deterrent. The Sacramento Bee reports that the state capitol will test the plates first. So while driving, display is kind of like a Kindle, shows your license plate number. When your car is parked, you could have a customized message show. There are probably some limitations on that. And then the license plate, the license number would still be visible in the upper right-hand corner. If the car is stolen, the plate could be wirelessly updated to say stolen or something of the like, make finding it easier, although that opens up some questions about tracking people in general. You could also remove the license plate, I suppose. Price also not cheap. $699 for the plate, not including installation, and then a $7 monthly fee.
I mean, it's not a fool. It's another deterrent to theft. It's not the solution to theft, right? Because as soon as they can, they're going to put paper plates on that thing, just like they would with a real license plate. But if it's flashing stolen as they're driving away because you figured it out right away, I don't know. Maybe that would help cut down a few percentage points. I like the idea of not having to put those stupid stickers on every month, but I don't think it's worth $699 for
that. That's, I mean, I was with you on all of these things, and I actually got to meet the founder and interview the founder. And it was interesting to talk to him about that because, you know, what's the business model here, right? It's e-ink. It's cool. It's display. It can change. It can flash advertising for your business when you're parked. But it's really for places that have to manage fleets. And if you have 100 vans, this will automatically, you know, or 100 rental cars, this will give you the ability to not only track your equipment, but also dealing with stuff like automating the registration and not having to put registration stickers on there and making registration stickers unstealable. It's bolted on in a way that makes it pretty, it's going to be a wicked ripping pain to get off.
Right.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
But, you know, it's really a commercial product for businesses with fleets more than
something. So if you've got 100 cars and you don't want to send Bob out or Gene out to put stickers on all of them, you can press a button and they all update. That's pretty handy. That starts to be worth a $7 monthly fee at
the moment. I mean, there's a back end interface. You can have, you know, all of your vehicles and all of your license plates and all the information. And let's say if you have 150 vans for your, you know, air conditioning service, anytime they're parked, they can be like, if you need better air, get 10% off by calling, you know what I mean? Like whatever your spiel is. But it was something I was like, you know, this is a really expensive grayscale novelty plate. And he's like, it's not what it's for.
Yeah, it's for fleets. And that's why that makes sense, because the city of the capital, the city of Sacramento, is the first test case for this. The government itself is like, let's see if this works for us. And then maybe we'll approve it for other people. That all makes sense. I'm glad you actually got a chance to talk to them.
It's very well made.
My first reaction was like, oh, you know, people would like put expletives on, you know, while they're parked at Whole Foods and upset the rest of us. But I'm like, bumper stickers already do that.
Yeah, that's true. They're just harder to change. That's all. Hey, folks, if you want to get all the tech headlines each day in about 5 minutes, be sure to subscribe to Daily Tech Headlines at dailytechheadlines.com. All right, Patrick, you have been testing earbuds. And let me tell you, earbuds are that thing that frustrates people because they're small, they're easy to break, and you want them to sound really good, but they're never going to sound as good as, I don't know, real audio or even speakers or full-on headphones. What have you found? What are some of the best earbuds?
Well, I would argue that some of the best earbuds or some of the best in-ear monitors can sound as good or better than any, you know, full-scale headphone. But and I will not get into the whole metaphysical concept of like, how do we know what it sounded like? Because most of what we listen to is actually constructed in a studio and engineered and manipulated. And half the people on a particular track may have not actually been in the same room or the same building when they recorded it. It gets kind of weird to contemplate. Yeah. Metaphysical. It's all very artificial. But one of the things I've noticed recently, because I've listened to a lot of earbuds and headphones, is price is absolutely not a guarantee of quality. There are a lot of tremendously overpriced. There's a lot of audio gear that's sold to people with too much money and questionable taste in you know, audio profiles or hearing or tuning on headphones. Which is me being obnoxious, but it's fundamentally true. I mean, it's amazing when you hear like a $1,200 earbud, you're like, the $300 one sounded better, and they're $300. And you know, those $100 headphones sound as really, you know, pretty much as good as those. I digress, but two that really stand out. My favorite for a couple of years now is from a company called One More. They were kind of funded by Xiaomi and had a couple of Foxconn execs. And they've got some really interesting engineering going on. The One More triple driver in-ear headphones. That's what I'm holding right here. They literally have multiple drivers inside each earbud. They sound fantastic. They're a little, if you like a little, little extra on the high end, make your cymbals really sparkle. These do a good job without, you know, exhausting or fatiguing your ear in a long time. And like $100 is where you really start to get stuff that if you shop carefully sounds a lot better than most of what else is out there. And I mean, it's amazing when you hear a good set of earbuds, you start to realize how bad the earbuds that came with your phone actually are. And recently I've been playing around with the earbuds from a company called Periodic Audio, and they're like the honey badger of audio engineering. They're like, we're going to do stuff. We're going to put all the money in the driver and we're going to save as much money as we can. So they, you know, they use injection molded cases, and they use the same sort of thing for every single thing. They have $100, $200, and a $300 one. And the $300 one sounds as good as some products I've heard for upwards of $1,000 from other companies. It is incredibly, there's a huge soundstage, incredible detail, and they have thud. They have a tremendous, not too much bass, but all of the bass is there. But they do a $100 one called the Magnesium. And it's not quite as spacious and detailed as the $300 headphone, but it is fantastically good for the money. And it's a little more bass than the One More triple driver, and a little bit less sizzle, or a little bit less on the top end. Like, you know, lots of like details there. The cymbals are all there. The high end's all there, but maybe not as intense or sibilant. And it's amazing to me how good these sound for $100. And I get like $100 is a lot of money to a lot of people. But it's a really fantastic way to really hear everything out of the tracks you're listening to. And I often get requests for cheap earbuds, and I automatically send people over to the Wirecutter. Lauren Dragan is a fantastic reviewer. She does really, really good work on audio stuff. And she's it's really crazy. She's tested, like, I want to say 108 different sub-$50 earbuds. You know, and she's been near, I think she's like investigated, you know, a couple hundred. This is someone who's literally heard and tested hundreds of headphones. She's found one called the AKG Y20U, and you can pick that up. They've got links in the Wirecutter, of course. That sells for, I want to say, $30.
Yep.
And actually, you know, will stomp like Apple's earbuds into the floor. Like it will mock them mercilessly. And you know, point at them and laugh.
Well, for those of us with weird ears, I mean, Apple's earbuds just don't fit in my ears. Even if they're not falling out, they're not positioned right. So I like all the audio is actually being lost. So that's a really big part of it, especially like if you're jogging or being active.
Yeah.
And, you know, you need headphones that are kind of road warriors.
It's amazing. Like the one more kind of completely insane, I want to say you get 11 different tips and multiple sizes inside the box that everything comes in. Periodic Audio does, I want to say, three different silicone and two different foam ones. It's definitely something that's nice when you start spending more money on earbuds. They work much, much harder to make sure they actually fit in your ears. And I am with you. Like, you know, I'm sure my ears are twice the size of your ears and I can't, you know, I can never get ear. They always kind of like, I want to turn them upside down and backwards. And then they still fall out. I mean, the Apple EarPods are one of the most frustrating products I've ever used, I think. There's also, goodness, I can't think of, I want to say Conform. And
is it it's one where it molds to your ear or something?
Yeah, well, it doesn't mold you. They actually make replacement tips that are kind of universal replacement tips. I apologize. I should have
Worries. We've got some great recommendations in the $100 and $50 category here, and I highly I second Patrick's recommendation to read Lauren's work because she really does a good job, and her runner-up recommendation, Brainwaves Delta, offers free replacement if it ever breaks, which these things do. You just email them and send them a picture of you destroying the old ones and they send you the new one. What about over-the-ear headphones, though, before we go? What about if somebody's like, you know what? I don't want buds. I don't want things sticking in my ear.
You know, the kind of classic – oh, it's complyfoam.com is the people who make the universal tips for earbuds. The classic starter point for me is a Sony MDR-7506. They sell for $80. You have to spend a lot more money to get a significant sound improvement. You know, I've been playing around with the Neurophone recently, which is a $400 Bluetooth / Aptx HD / over-ear headphone, and it's the craziest thing because they have what they call their immersion mode. Does a bunch of stuff. One, it actually tests your hearing. Use like otoacoustic testing of your hearing. Custom creates a balance for your left and right ear, applies that, and then allows you to choose what they call their level of immersion. They're like, you know, are you in the front row or the 20th row? But essentially, it's like a loudness knob in the car. You can turn the bass up to where you feel it. And it's kind of crazy because it has in-ears, a full-range in-ear driver, kind of like a stick, a stalk that goes into your ear, and an over-ear headphone. And the over-ear headphone also contains a little driver that does the low-end frequency. And I wish, you know, because they kind of scream gimmick, and you know, we reviewed them on TechBing this week. I was shocked at how good they are and how good wireless audio can be at its best.
Well, thank you, Patrick. And of course, we'll mention it again at the end of the show, but check out TechThing if you want more detail on this sort of stuff. Thanks to everybody who participates in our show. All kinds of ways. You can email us. You can go on our subreddit, dailytechnewsshow.reddit.com. Good place to just find out what other people in the audience think is important. We look at it and putting together the show, for instance, and people having discussions about the stories there as well. You can also have discussions about anything you want regarding technology at facebook.com/groups/dailytechnewsshow. All right, let's check the mailbag. What's in it, Sarah?
Let's do it. Russell from Newcastle upon Tyne. I think that's how it's called. It's in the UK. His thoughts on our busker chat, which was in yesterday's show, how street performers are adopting contactless payment options because people are getting rid of cash, you know, more so than ever, and points out there may be some cultural differences going on. He says Americans are used to tipping, but it causes secret inner panic for many of us Brits. Is it tipping thing, this situation? How do you do it appropriately? You don't want to be rude, kind of like haggling. Some people think it's acceptable. Some people get very uncomfortable about it. With contactless payments, you could read the price, either cough it up or just ignore the busker, looking carefully the other way. No studying the previous donations, no struggling for coins, no finding a fiver and then saying, I don't actually want to give this up, even though you're very good at what you do. He says cash is on the decline in the UK overall. Even at my little corner shop, they do contactless. actually, I'm in an awkward phase. I so rarely need cash. I never have any in the increasingly rare instances when I need it. Russell, I'm with you. Same here.
Yeah. Let me say, the whole tipping situation in the U.S. also confuses and panics many Americans as well. It was so nice to be traveling in Australia where I'm like, you round up the taxi and that's pretty much all you have to worry about. And it is... There's lots of good reasons for it. I'm not going to get into that controversy, but it is confusing. And so having that busker situation, I didn't even think about this aspect where it's like, hey, it's £2. You want to support me at £2? Great. If not, no worries. Just keep on walking and enjoy the music, right? I think that's a fantastic cultural insight on this. So thank you, Russell, for that.
You know, there's a coffee shop, a really small little coffee shop that's near me that accepts a variety of you know, payments that I could make from my phone when I go in and get a $5 coffee. And it's great. But they have the default tip set at 25%.
Nice.
Which I know, which is like, if you're not paying attention, you're like, yeah, I'm done. And then you pay and whatever. But it's like, it's a coffee and I'm not staying and there's all this sort of stuff. So you kind of have to go in and be like, no, I actually want to tip you less. And then you feel bad about yourself. So there is some psychological stuff going on here.
Yeah.
I'm just surprised that people don't get upset about that. I would be very curious how many people do the automatic, you know, that's a good healthy tip.
It's easy enough to change, right? It's a no conflict situation.
They don't
it's
force
there,
it on you,
right? Yeah. And nobody's going to say anything if you tap 10%. It's putting the argument in your own head.
It's a suggested tip that happens to be kind of high for a small purchase.
And having been stiffed at tables of 12, where you got like, you know, $8 on $300 of food, I can totally get why. You know, they enforce tipping. It would also be nice if all the baristas and wait staff and everything around the world actually made a living wage and weren't relying on tips. But there's also a certain joy when you like count out that tip jar at the end of the night, like, yes!
Live for the thrill of the tip jar.
I don't know. I'd rather, you know.
Yeah. I have noticed, and this is entirely anecdotal, I seem to feel like I get friendlier, better service at places where in cultures, I should say, not places, in cultures where there is no tipping, because those people feel like they're taken care of. They don't feel like they're in a dead end job. And they're not worried that you're not going to tip, that they're not going to be able to pay their bills. They just have a better support structure. And I know tipping is supposed to encourage better service, but it doesn't seem to always work that way.
Yeah.
That's all I'll say about that. I'm not against tipping. In cultures where it exists, you should absolutely tip and tip well if you have good service.
When I went to Japan for the first time a few years ago, I knew that tipping was just not part of the deal beforehand because I kind of read some stuff, but I was still so uncomfortable.
Yeah,
like,
right? It's hard to get used to.
Is this okay? I feel so rude right now leaving. But anyway, yeah. You know, hey, global stuff. It's variety is a spice of life. Speaking of variety, Patrick is doing all sorts of stuff these days. Let folks know what's up with you besides wireless headphones.
Oh, my goodness. Well, AVXL.com, that's the podcast I host with Robert Hare. We talk about home theater and audio and getting the best deal no matter what your budget is, trying to give you an extraordinary experience. And, of course, TechThing, TechThing.com is the show I host weekly with Shannon about technology.
Hooray!
Answer questions, review shows, talk about DNS settings.
Yeah. You want more in-depth reviews on things and how
products,
stuff?
I should say. Yeah. We review products, not shows.
Well, folks, we are up 5 patrons over last month, and there's only one more day. So let's see how far we can go. Get that number higher. The more people support the show, the more things we can do. And we like to beat that number by as much as possible every month. So big thanks to everybody who supports us at whatever amount they can. There's lots of cool perks there. You get early access to DTNS Labs, for instance. Scott Johnson has a labs about how he has changed how he publishes his art online because of getting hacked how it really has taught him a lot. And he shares what he learned with you. That's in the Patreon feed right now if you're a patron at patreon.com/DTNS.
Our email address is feedback@dailytechnewsshow.com. If you have a favorite earbud, please let us know, or anything, you know. We are live Monday through Friday at 4:30 p.m. Eastern, 20:30 UTC. Find out more at dailytechnewsshow.com/live.
We'll be talking over Mary Meeker's report tomorrow with Justin Robert Young. See you then.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Stripe Tap to Pay on iPhone came along and changed everything. With Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. No more juggling different methods. Just a simple tap on my iPhone and transactions are complete. What's truly remarkable is how Stripe caters to all my customers' preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Stripe ensures a smooth checkout experience every time. Setting up Stripe was a breeze, taking just minutes to get up and running. From local markets to global retailers, Stripe helped me expand my reach and grow my business with ease. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.